Look at the dandy of them, Mr. Banjo, doesn't he put on airs? Hat cocked on one side, Mr. Banjo, walking stick in his hand. Hat cocked on one side, Mr. Banjo, walking stick in his hand. Look at the dandy of there, Mr. Banjo, doesn't he put on airs? Look at the dandy, oh, there, Mr. Banjo, doesn't he put on airs? Boots that go crank, crank, Mr. Banjo, yeller gloves my eye. Boots that go crank, crank, Mr. Banjo, yeller gloves my eye. Look at the dandy, oh, there, Mr. Banjo, doesn't he put on airs? Look at the dandy, oh, there, Mr. Banjo, doesn't he put on airs? Great big diamond ring, Mr. Banjo, silver watch and chain, Mr. Banjo. Great big diamond ring, Mr. Banjo, silver watch and chain. Look at the dandy, oh, there, Mr. Banjo, doesn't he put on airs? Doesn't he put on airs, Mr. Banjo, doesn't he put on airs?
You are tuned in to 106.1 FM, WSCA, Portsmouth. We are Portsmouth Community Radio. And now it's time for Local Folk, the program dedicated to the local folk music scene and the people who make it happen. I'm your host, Stephen Kerrigan, and I'm excited to share the many different ways we arrive at our place in the traditional music community, and also how we involve ourselves in the great groups of local folk. This includes musicians, listeners, collectors, sessioneers, and any other keepers of the tradition. And I do this through the music and stories of my guests who are willing to sit with me and share with you a little bit about themselves. Before I introduce my guest this evening, I do have a few announcements, including thanks, followed by the weather, community bulletins, and something from our great and magnanimous underwriters. Thanks today goes out to Tom Hall. I really want to thank him. I was invited to, I received a scholarship to go basically serve dinner at a place called Indian Neck this Mother's Day weekend. It's a folk festival that has been going on for about 40 or 50 years, and apparently it's quite difficult to go to, and I really thank Tom Hall for having recommended me for the scholarship, and we're making it happen, so I'm really excited about that. Thank you very much, Tom Hall. Let's get on to the weather. It's 44 degrees Fahrenheit and fair. Tonight it's going to be mostly clear with a low around 31. West wind between 5 and 7 miles per hour. Tuesday will be sunny with a high near 39. Northwest wind between 5 and 10 miles per hour. I don't like to go past Tuesday because you never know what's going to happen. Also, a few things going on here at the studio. Seniors Magazine, a program for and about seniors. This is on Thursday mornings, 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. Are you concerned about Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid or living wills or reverse mortgages? If you are, then tune in to Seniors Magazine, WSCA LP 106.1 FM, Portsmouth Community Radio. Not only that, hey, there is a peace vigil in Portsmouth's Market Square, and it takes place every Friday from 5 to 6 p.m. And it's sponsored by Seacoast Peace Response. The vigil is a presence in opposition to U.S. warfare and to any further expansion of military retaliation. For additional information, the contact number is 603 433 4119. One more announcement. The library welcomes knitters of all ages and levels of experience. The Knitwits knitting group will launch their bi-monthly gathering. Folks may bring works in progress to share with other knitters. Library assistant and experienced knitter Lisa Harling will offer basic instruction and knitting tips. The Knitwits will meet bi-monthly on Wednesdays from 10 to noon in the Hilton Garden Room. Registration is not required, just an enthusiasm for the craft of knitting that is required. This program is offered at no charge. For more information, or if you need more information, you can get it by calling 603-766-1700 or www.cityofportsmouth.com/library. The library is located at 175 Parrott Ave, next to the middle school. And now, from our underwriters. Programming on Portsmouth Community Radio is made possible by you, our members, and by Daystar Computer Services, offering business-class technology services designed to meet each client's needs. Information at daystarinc.com. And by Do Hair Salon at 25 Government Street in Kittery, specializing in everything for hair. Cuts, colors, do's, updo's, and urban styling. You can reach Do at 207-439-4009. Now let's get back to local folk. My guest today is one of the first that I've had on the show who didn't grow up, per se, with a musical background. Besides a few memories of his dad playing a little harmonica and some instances of relatives singing around a piano at family gatherings, music wasn't a big priority during his formative years. So, in a lot of ways, he's a self-made man. Instead of being pressed by his parents into classical piano lessons or other such childhood torture for some, he sought out his own lessons for the guitar and paid for the lessons himself. Music became more important in his life as he started collecting records. The more he collected, the more he realized that there was so much more to listen to, as happens with a lot of us. He sought out obscure B-sides and other unique or lesser-known compositions in his quest to expand his musical horizons. By college, he was learning to finger-pick a guitar, and during the summers, he was able to practice finger-picking that guitar in one of those towers used to do fire lookout. He also learned how to play some five-string banjo while he was on fire watch in one of those big towers that you see. And while he was in college, he discovered traditional music for himself. His name is Bob Paul, and he has a long musical history here on the Seacoast. He's played everything from contra dances to barroom sessions to church music, and his arsenal of instruments includes, among other things, banjo, guitar, and hammered dulcimer. I have had the pleasure of sharing many a stage and session with him, and I'm pleased, really pleased, to have him here with me tonight. So it is my privilege to welcome Bob Paul to Local Folk. Hey, Bob, thanks for being here.
You're welcome, Steve.
Hey, I would just like to start off, like I do sometimes, almost every time, with a song. I'd like to start off with a song, or a tune, I think, in this case, that inspired you to delve more deeply in traditional music. I would like to play... just a moment. I would like to play this wonderful... Do we have it here?
The cover for it?
I'll tell you.
The album's all queued up. It's Itinerant Musicians License. It's Dudley Loffman and Randy Miller's on it. They're both New Hampshire institutions. They go way back. But this is a recording that Dudley recorded himself, mostly contra dance music, but it's got other stuff on it, too. It's just an eye-opener in terms of traditional music for me. I'd never heard anything like that before.
Okay, I can't wait to hear it. Itinerant Musicians License, Dudley Loffman, Jack Perrin?
I don't know. I don't know all the people.
Randy Miller. Fred Brunig.
Brunig. He went on to sing with Noel Sing with Clear.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Excellent. Wow. I can't wait to hear it. Here we go. Itinerant Musician's License. Thank you. Excellent. This is Local Folk. This is Steve Kerrigan, and we were just listening to a contra dance, an example of a contra dance. I am here with Bob Paul, my guest, who, when he was in college, hadn't really heard too much folk music until he was introduced to this, to the contra dancing. Tell me a little bit. We were just chatting a moment ago, and I was wondering, what is the difference between a square dance and a contra dance for those of you out there who do not know?
I think a square dance tends to be more country music oriented, and they do have squares, and I think that's what more people are familiar with. Contra dance, the basis of it is people line up in lines, long lines opposite each other, and as the dancers move through the steps, they change partners and go all the way up and down the line separately from each other. And the music, in at least in New Hampshire, tends to be more traditional as opposed to more country type music. So it's very similar, but the dances tend to be spoken in terms of the leading as opposed to square dances, where they often sing the steps as telling you what to do, instructing you what to do.
Okay, so but if you were a square dance caller, you might be able to call a contra dance as well. Or if you went to a dance, are they generally all, you know? But back when you were in college, tell me about what was getting you going with this music. You were listening. You probably, what year did you go to college?
This was 71 to 76.
71 to 76. So there was this singer-songwriter thing going on at the time that was probably on the radio, or?
Folk music, you mean what I was doing?
Yeah, what I'm saying is, what was it about this music that was, or what I'm asking is, how was this different than other things that were going on at the time?
Well, folk music was going on, you know, but it was kind of faded out to some degree, but I was still aware of it, you know. It was still nice. It was what I was leaning toward. Mm-hmm. But this you could call it more traditional music, mm-hmm. where it's largely or almost exclusively instrumental, for what I was interested in.
Okay.
And it was dance music for dances I wasn't used to. I wasn't used to that kind of the first time I'd ever seen that. So, mm-hmm. wow, you know, this is fun. I love the music because most dances, conventional dances, all the rock music and stuff, you know, I don't necessarily like a lot of it. So, you know, all those things put together got me going.
Get you going. Is it something about instrumental music? I want to talk about instrument because you're an instrumentalist. Most of the music that you play now is tunes,
when
correct?
I learned guitar, I learned to sing with it mainly as an excuse to be able to play guitar.
I see.
And I've always been self-conscious about singing. I'm not self-conscious about playing, but I am about singing. So I can sing pretty well, I think. And I used to sing a lot more than I do now, but
So you used songs as a reason to play the guitar as opposed to, you know, I would say that's not unique to you, but I don't even play the guitar really right now, but if I did, it would only be as a means to be able to sing songs. So this is a little bit different. In fact, it's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. Hey, let's talk about this band Swallowtail. You brought in a group called Swallowtail. Is this something that you were listening to in college or what was this?
They started up after I finished college, I think. They were from UNH, mostly. I think one of them might not have been. They were a contra dance band, but they were all classical musicians, mm-hmm. I believe. They played tremendous arrangements. It was very interesting to listen to, and it was always a variety. Practically every time through the tune, they'd have different instrumentation on it, and mm-hmm. it was just endlessly fascinating listening to them. And it was lively music as well. They were very entertaining. So all those things put together, plus music was good. They also seemed to lean largely toward Irish music as mm-hmm. opposed to a lot of the other kinds of contra dance music around here.
It's not Irish normally. Contra dance is not an Irish.
Well, they use all sorts of traditional music that a lot of it has Irish heritage to it, but mm-hmm. The rhythm of it is different than Irish music.
Ah, I see.
It's a subtlety, but... you know, it's for the dance. The dance dictates what the rhythm should be, and the music accommodates that.
Hmm. So when are people going to realize right off the bat the differences in the rhythm that are happening here?
No, that's still contra dance music. It'd be a lot like Dudley Laufman. Only this tune I have you play, it's got nothing to do with contra dancing. It's an air. It's Sleeve na Bon. It's because they did other music besides just dance music.
Okay.
And this is just a lovely air, and it grabbed my attention because it's so lovely.
Well, for those that don't know, what is an air?
I don't know exactly. It's almost like a free-form song or instrumental. Sounds like, typically if it's an instrumental, it sounds like it could have words. And it's, the rhythm is not necessarily as important. It's, it's often background, and if there's any rhythm at all, it's more of a overall flow to the music.
Like Sean Noss music?
Yeah, I would say there's a lot of Sean Noss that is, would have errors as, the overlapping in that style.
Okay. So this should be something with a looser rhythm that sounds like it may have words. Well, I don't know. Let's give it a listen.
This song actually does have words, but they're playing it instrumentally.
Oh, it does?
So, yes.
Okay. This is called Sleeve Navan.
Yes.
It's not spelled that way. This is from Swallowtail, and it is on an album called Flights of Fancy. You have Ron Grosselin on fiddle and mandolin, Dave Cantieni, George Marshall, Tim Van Egmond, Tim Triplett, and Anne Percival. Here we go.
Thank you.
This is Steve Carrigan, and this is Local Folk. We're here, and we've just listened to Swallowtail, Flights of Fancy, and we listened to the Irish air, Sleeve na Bann. I'm here with Bob Paul, who brought this in, and I thought that was just totally elegant, personally. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, one thing that made an impression on me was that these classical players had a respect for traditional music. I mean, my experience with classical music was more of a, this is the way you do it, and, you know, our way or the highway, or, you know, it's like I didn't understand why they didn't teach popular music in college, or you couldn't really study it, you know, unless you went to Berkeley, you know, and mm-hmm. So I felt left out that way. You know, and so I always rebel against being left out.
Rebel. Well, you studied classical guitar in college
later.
A little bit?
No, that was later, after college.
It was later. Okay. And you didn't continue to do it because you felt that, what was it?
Well, I never was interested in classical guitar.
Okay.
It was just a means to an end. I bumped into a fellow who lived upstairs from me who mm-hmm. Was a classical guitar player. He asked me to play for him, and then he told me he could teach me everything I needed to know in a year. So I thought, okay,
wow.
We'll do that.
Wow.
And 2.5 years later, I said I'd had enough. But I found out a lot. It wasn't just studying classical guitar. I was also studying arranging and interpreting and composing and, you know, what makes
really?
Music tick. Yeah,
really?
Yeah, all those things that go into it.
Okay, so you weren't just learning the chords.
No,
you were
no. It
really
was, it was like an intense study of mm-hmm. music on my own, you know, like I'd get in a music school or something, you know.
So as you're doing this, eventually, this is at this time that you're listening to something like this, you were playing the banjo, you were playing the guitar. Any other instruments that you were playing?
That was mainly it. I kind of gave up the banjo after a year or so. It was mostly guitar because I was working more on composing and singing. And
so what is it about are you an engineer by trade?
I studied engineering in college.
Okay.
I'm a software analyst, you want to call it?
Software
administrator,
analyst.
I guess. Software administrator. Systems administrator, technically.
Systems administrator. So you like to analyze things.
A lot of analysis, a lot of problem solving, yes.
So is that what attracted you to some portions of this music?
I have no idea.
You just heard it and you liked it, and that was that?
It was the emotional connection is what got me. You know, when I was in high school, I really got sucked into music because it was, you know, allowed me to have my feelings validated, you know, all those traumas you go through.
Yep, yep.
And
yep.
The same thing continued in college. And so I thought I love music too much, and I eventually decided I got to do this more.
Yeah, yeah.
On my own.
What's, so you were drawn to it just by the pure emotion of it, but then as you started listening to it and finding it, you found yourself saying, I wonder what makes this.
A lot of it was by learning guitar, you start looking for guitar music that you could play, mm-hmm. you know, and so that draws me to folk music, or mm-hmm. at least me, you know, I suppose you could go to other things.
Yeah.
But acoustic guitar and folk music go hand in hand.
You seem to like stringed instruments.
Yeah, I came to the conclusion I like acoustic music,
mm-hmm.
and even like looking back at the music I used to like before I even started playing guitar seriously, it was mm-hmm. all these bands that had acoustic guitar focus on them, like Creedence had a lot of mm-hmm. acoustic guitar, the Beatles, the favorite Beatles mm-hmm. tunes I like are primarily acoustic guitar.
Mm-hmm. But you obviously really strayed from that when you headed towards some of these things like the Swallowtail.
I was playing guitar. I started going to the press room and was playing guitar at first, and that was good for a while, but it was, you know, basically accompaniment, and, you know, if I wanted to learn the melodies, I needed to do something else. Guitar wasn't suitable for that unless you want to play solo. So I picked up mandolin at that point and decided to start learn something, because mandolin works, because fiddle tunes and mandolin go hand in hand, the same fingering. So I don't have to deal with bowing or fretting. Without the frets.
Right.
You know, the mandolin, you got it.
They're like salt and pepper. They just go well together.
Yeah.
But there is another instrument that you are most well known for.
Yes.
And that is the hammered dulcimer.
Yes.
And when I was performing with you more with Toad in the Road, you were playing the hammered dulcimer. I think in the Angel Band, you were playing hammered dulcimer. And let's talk about the beginnings of the hammered dulcimer. You told me that it took you years and years after having heard the hammered dulcimer before you finally purchased one.
Yes. Part of it was because it's a steep entry cost to it, you know, several hundred dollars, you know, maybe $500 or $600 at that time. And I thought, well, I got to make sure I like it. I don't know if I'm going to like it.
Yeah.
And so I held off, and I eventually decided, well, you know, maybe it's worth giving it a try. And I went to this music, I think it was early music festival of some kind down in Boston. It might have been the Museum of Fine Arts or Modern Art. And they had all these instruments that people don't play anymore, like early music instruments. But they also had a number of hammer dulcimers. They had like five or six hammered dulcimer builders there. And so I could listen to all these instruments and decide which one I liked the best. And
wow.
I said, wow, I like this one best. And then the guy actually had a kit, so I could get one. It only cost me $150 if I built the rest of it myself. So that's what I did.
Well, I'd like to listen to one of these hammered dulcimer tunes. It's a record called The Hammered Dulcimer, Bill Spence with Fennig's All-Star String Band. And we're listening to side two. It looks like it's going to be Don Tremain's reel with Dubuque.
Dubuque.
Okay, and the fiddles on this are Jay Unger and Tom McCreesh. Let's listen to this, and then we'll talk about it a little bit more. This is part of what inspired.
That's Contra Dance. They're a Contra Dance band as well.
Oh, okay. Hey, let's rock and roll. Let's Contra Dance. You're tuned in to 106.1 FM, WSCA, LP, Portsmouth. We are Portsmouth Community Radio. My name is Steve Carrigan, and this is Local Folk Program. I'm here with my guest, Bob Paul, and we just listened to an album called The Hammered Dulcimer. Bill Spence with Fennig's All-Star String Band. Bob is a hammered dulcimer player, and he's most well-known, probably most well-known around here for being the hammered dulcimer player of the Angel Band. I had Mark Rockwood on a few weeks ago from the Angel Band. I would like to have every single member, previous member of the Angel Band that still is in the general area, I suppose, in here because it was... How long was the Angel Band around for?
Started roughly in 94 and went to about the end of 2005.
It's about 11 years.
10 plus years, yes.
So tell me about the beginnings of this band. 10 years, we were talking about that. That must be about 75, 80 years in dog life. Dog years.
Well, we didn't start with the intention of forming a band. We were a bunch of people who hung out at the press room, and there were no other jams other than the press room at the time, except in people's houses. And so the way things worked at the time was someone would have people over on the weekend for a little jam session, and then they say, okay, where are we going to meet next week? And say, okay, let's go to so-and-so's house. So we all meet up there for a jam session. And the people who became the most regulars, you know, eventually we kept going on, and then somebody would invite us to a party because we'd have people hanging on just for the fun of it, out. And so we'd have this party, and then after a few parties, you know, someone would said, well, do you have any recordings, you know? So we had, oh, no, we got to make ourselves a recording now, you know? And so somewhere before that, we decided to be a real band. Like at first, we were kind of playing with Tom Hall. When he had a gig, he'd invite us along with as part of the Great Bay Company, because all the same people were jamming together. And it evolved. We had to Dave Bem.
Okay,
you know he named it the Angel Band. He decided we got to get together. We got to make it official. We started out with two harps. We had Mary Paul and Mary Foe. And our first gig, so we had, I think, 9 people in the band, their very first gig with two harps.
Nine people. Wow. Great.
Yeah. And that was one of the Mojo Fest. Mojo Fest was a traditional music fest that was in the area yearly for, I don't know, 15 years or so. And this might have been the second to last one or something like that that they had.
Mojo Fest.
Yes. Chicken Bone Jones.
So you had 9 people. So it was mostly, so just to get this straight, you were playing at the press room and you were playing at a lot of jam sessions at people's houses. Was this all freeform or was it more like a jam session call it a traditional music session. Is that what you're calling a jam session?
Right, and it wasn't just Irish. It was bluegrass, whatever people came. You know, bluegrass, old-time music, French-Canadian. And because we had harps, they were learning all this O'Carolan music.
Okay.
And other harp music, but largely O'Carolan because of the books they were learning from. And so we'd all learn the O'Carolan in order to play along with them.
Okay.
And everyone would kind of play together, but you know, every once in a while, you know, they want to hear the harps, you know, like the harps would get overcome by all the other music. You couldn't hear the harps.
Right.
So someone would say, quiet, just the harps.
Yep.
So just let the harps play. And then the next time around, everyone would join in, you know, and that became the beginnings of an arrangement maybe for that particular tune. And the same thing would happen on other tunes. And someone would say, oh, just the fiddles or just the flutes,
you know.
And so you'd have all these instruments swapping around. And then that tradition kind of got rolled into the Angel Band, where the principle being that when you have something good going on a particular subset of the band, you want to highlight it. You don't want to cover it up. So you have that thing going on, and everyone else supports it.
So you had 9 people, but they weren't necessarily all playing at the same time. Is
right.
That, okay. So and just to get it clear, exactly who were the members of the Angel Band?
For the first recording had David Bem, Jeff Lynn, Sam Goodall, Bob Frost, Emery Hutchins, Rocky Rockwood, myself, and Mary Paul. Mary Foe was in it before we made the first recording. And then after the first recording, Sam and Jeff left, and before we made our second recording, Catherine Norris joined us.
Okay, now we're going to listen to an Angel Band tune right now, and it's just the number one tune, Carolyn's
This is
Draft?
Carolyn's Draft. This was our, it's almost considered our theme song or tune that we'd start all our concerts with for the first 5 years or so until we said, well, maybe we should try something else. Because it just flows.
So this was sort of an opening song?
It was an opening song that we used, yes.
Okay, now is this the original Angel Band? This is the first Angel Band CD that we're going to listen to right now? So this is the first song.
The first track on the first Angel Band CD.
Okay, hey, let's listen to that right now. Excellent. That was the Angel Band with their theme song, Carolyn's Draft. We're here with Bob Paul. I find it great that that the journey would have started with some Creedence Clearwater Revival and things like that, and eventually wound up to something that sounds so incredibly elegant. That's what I like about O'Carolyn music. What is it that really appeals to you most? I know that you said that the Angel Band was a little bit driven by the O'Carolyn because the harps could participate. Is that correct? Or
yes. Initially, we just played whatever we liked. But it wasn't until we went to Ireland for the O'Carolyn Festival at Knobber in 1998, was it? Or nine? I'm not sure which it was. Probably 1999, where... We thought, well, you know, up till then, we thought it wasn't so unusual what we were doing. We were just doing what we were doing. And once we did that, and we actually had the blessing of the president of Cum Holtis Cultori Éireann saying, well, yeah, you do, we like what you're doing, you know. So, and this is Ireland, you know. We didn't know what to expect. We were pretty nervous when we went over to Ireland to play their music, you know.
But we
had a very good reception, and enough so that they invited us back, you know, a few years later.
Wow.
And we were the only We were the only group other than the Chieftains at that time to have been invited more than once. So we were pretty appreciated. So after that point, we said, well, this O'Carolan thing seems to be something we're good at.
Yes.
So maybe we should do more of this.
Yeah, really.
So we focused as much as we could on O'Carolan, but we still had the other stuff for variety and to make things interesting, and because we liked other stuff too, you know.
Okay, sure. But originally, that's how you started to play the Turlock O'Carolan stuff, which is just so lovely. In fact, we have a program coming up next, which is Under the Radar, and the DJ's here right now, and he's saying, man, I miss this band, and I think that there's a lot of people that do miss the Angel Band. Boy, at the same time that the Angel Band was playing, there was also, is it a side project that you're working on?
It was just for fun. Sam Goodall and Jeff left the band shortly after, you know, a year or two after the first recording.
Mm-hmm.
Mary and I got together with Sam just for the fun of it, just to play creative music. Sam's a very creative musician, and Jeff is too. And we got together just for fun, and then eventually Sam had this project going on. She was in Voices in the Heart, and she was going to create a CD. She wanted to create a CD for the people in the band and her friends and things like that. So that's how the CD got started. We were not a band. We were just doing this as a project.
Okay.
The whole time we were together, we had one gig. And we were so disappointed, but we couldn't keep it together. We had our own ideas of how to do things, you know.
But it was an opportunity to sort of have a satellite thing and to be doing your own thing. And
yeah, when you're in a band, you can't expect the band to satisfy all your musical needs.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You know, it doesn't hurt to do something else on the side for fun, too.
Well, this also gave you an opportunity to record a solo track.
Almost solo. At the end, the other members come in. It's very nice.
So it's a mostly solo track. This is something that really showcases the hammered dulcimer?
Yes, and it's an air. It's the Loch Tay Boat Song, which is a very beautiful tune, and I was very proud of my arrangement on this because I copied a guitar arrangement to do it. And
So this is something that you
I rearranged. I arranged for dulcimer from a guitar source, which I heard on the radio and picked that up, you know.
Let's listen to this. This is Orchid. We have Sam Goodall, violin, Jeff Lynn, bass, Mary Paul, Celtic harp, and Bob Paul Hammer, dulcimer. This is the Loch Tay Boat Song. Thank you.
I must say, for all the music I've played and all the bands I've been in, the Orchid was the one that was the most rewarding.
Tell me about that. Why?
It was the most creative. Mm-hmm. We got a sound that was unique. It wasn't copying anybody. We did a couple of original tunes by Jeff Lind. We really stretched the limits of what we could do. And in the process, learned more about playing, you know, myself. So
it was that was a beautiful composition right there. For myself, I really could appreciate the
I'd love to play another one if we could,
violin.
But maybe when we get to it later. We'll see.
Why don't we play another one? Why don't we play one more from Orchid?
Okay.
What would you like to hear?
Foreign Land might be good. It's kind of a folk chamber jazz or something. I don't know. It's non-categorizable.
What's happening to me is I'm sitting here blown. I just keep thinking to myself that you don't need to. If I were to just walk into this, I would say, boy, he must have grown up with classical music and wanted to do some sort of classical music thing. But the roots of what or how you came to this or decided to go to this type of music are so different. And that's what's so interesting to me. And I absolutely love it. So not to interrupt, but go ahead.
Look at the cover. Foreign Land is third or fourth on there, I think.
Okay, right here. Foreign Land is number three. And is this an original composition?
It's a Jeff Lind composition, yes.
Let's listen to it right now.
Jeff Lind lives in Berwick, I believe, thereabouts.
Wow, that was excellent. That was an original composition by Jeff Lind, performed by the band Orchid. I have one of the members here, Bob Paul. We've been talking to him about his journey from, to the music, really. And we're going to have to wrap it up because there's only a few minutes left, but I do need to talk about a few things. I want to say, Bob, thank you so, so much for bringing this to me. We are going to play one more song at the end. It's one called Moving Cloud, and I probably have to say that it's part of an album called Toad in the Road, No Better Place to Be, and that is in a band that I myself was involved with. Now, this tune that we're going to listen to, I had no part in, but I was part of Toad in the Road as a singer for them, and I really enjoyed that. Part of what brought me to the music was Bob Paul and Mary Paul, so I wanted to thank them for that. So thanks for coming in tonight.
Thank you. It's fun.
Before we go, I'd like to let people know about other traditional musical sessions that are happening around in the area. Just want to let you know that Tuesdays at the Barley House in Concord, that is 7 to 10 p.m., and it's North Main Street in Concord. Wednesdays, we have Mel Flanagan's Irish Pub in Rochester. That starts at 6:30. Fridays, 5 to 9 at the Press Room, Daniel Street in Portsmouth. Sundays, we have Re-Raw in Portsmouth. That's the Mark Rockwood session that we have. And there, if there are any other sessions or anything like that I need to know about that I could announce online on the air, I would like to. You can contact me with any questions or comments about the show, or if you need to know anything else, at scarrigan at wscafm.org. Also, Bob Paul has Orchid CDs, and you can't get them at a store, and I think it was really beautiful. So if you do have interest in one of those CDs, please, once again, you can email me, scarrigan at wscafm.org, and I can certainly forward it on. I also have to let people know that I have a fan page on Facebook, and if you log into your Facebook account and you search for Steve Kerrigan's Local Folk Radio Show, you should be able to find me. There's a symbol, looks a bit like a guitar, like a guitar and a radio combined. If you like the show, you can give the fan page a like as well, and then I can let you know what's going on. Also, there's a link to the show's archive that can be found on the Steve Kerrigan Local Folk Radio Show Facebook page. So feel free to listen to your favorite episodes at any time. I do have them archived. Coming up next is Under the Radar, and the theme tonight will be big bands, and that happens the first Monday of the month. So we're looking forward to Under the Radar coming up next. And we will leave you tonight in a similar way. What we're going to call this a closing. We usually have a parting song. This time we're going to have a parting tune. It is from the Toad in the Road album, No Better Place to Be. And the name of the tune is Moving Cloud. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening to Local Folk. We will see you next week where we have a mystery guest, at least for now. Bye-bye.
Thank you.